Good morning. It is good to see you this morning. We are missing all the ladies who are on the retreat, but we're glad for them. I know it's a blessing for them, and I'm glad that you are here. And I want to make you aware of a couple of things. One, it's in the bulletin, but next Sunday night, we're going to have an all-church sort of mini bonfire in the back part of the property. We're going to roast hot dogs and make s'mores and just have a grand old time. So that's going to start at 5:30. We're going to provide everything, but you bring a chair if you want to sit out there, or you can wander around, or whatever the case may be. But we're going to have a good time next Sunday night. We hope you'll join us for that. I also want to reemphasize something Jennifer said about our trunk or treat, and that is, one, you don't have to decorate your car, your trunk to participate. So sometimes when people put together amazing decorations, which is really fun, some of the rest of us feel a little intimidated and are like, well, I can never really do that. I'm doing good just to get here. And what we would say is it would be really good if you get here. You can just open up the car, open up the trunk, have some candy available. Let me especially speak to, and a lot of them are gone right now, but some of our families with younger kids. I would encourage you, if you're thinking, well, I want to walk around with my kid this time and participate, I'd say, great, do that. Just leave your trunk open, leave some candy there. You don't have to stay there and hand out the candy. The kids walking around, they don't care if you handed them the candy or they grabbed a handful of candy. They just like the experience. And so I want to encourage you, if you're thinking we're walking around with our kids this year, I'd say fantastic. Walk around with your kids, but you're still getting here in a car, aren't you? So pop open that trunk, leave some candy. Let's make it a good night for us this Wednesday. If you have your Bibles, open up to Mark chapter 1. And we're going to spend a lot of time in Mark bouncing around at a couple of different passages. But we're going to start in 1:40. A man with leprosy came to him, to Jesus, and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Jesus was deeply moved, and he reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was cleansed. So do you remember the game of cooties growing up as a kid? It may not have felt so much like a game, but that game on the playground or in the classroom where you knew that other people, the designated people or person, had some invisible contaminant that you did not want, and it was transferred by human to human contact. And I don't know if we have ever discovered who patient zero is when it comes to the cooties, but we do know that it was usually assigned to someone or a group. And in my school growing up, it was usually boys versus girls. So I thought the girls had the cooties and the girls thought that the other boys had the cooties. I don't think I was ever included in that. And what you did know is you never, under any circumstances, wanted to be touched by someone who had the cooties. Okay, in his book about meeting Jesus in disguise, Richard Beck argues that while we use different names, the game in some ways continues for us as adults, because there are still certain people that evoke revulsion in us and bring about rejection in us, that there are certain people that elicit disgust and disdain, and then we have distrust with those, and we distance ourselves from those, and we don't use the name cooties, but we use some synonyms: creepy, they're sleazy, they're slimy, distasteful, gross, repugnant, revolting, nauseating, nasty, and the list could go on and on. There was a famous study in which psychologists decided to test some of this out. And so they invited a variety of people to their laboratory, and they grabbed a sweater, and they asked all of the people who came, would they be willing to try on the sweater? But there was one caveat. They said, would you be willing to try on this sweater? Now, before you try it on, we need to tell you that this sweater was owned and worn at one point by Adolf Hitler. Now, would you be willing to put on the sweater? Well, that's kind of an interesting question, isn't it? I don't know if the sweater was washed or the sweater wasn't washed, but they knew, at least who they said, the sweater was owned by and at one time worn by. Would you be willing to wear the sweater? Let me ask you, would you be willing to wear the sweater? What do you think most of the people said? Most of the people said, no, I don't want anything to do with anything associated with that vile human being. I want nothing to do with the sweater. And the few people who did try on the sweater were then asked, well, how did it make you feel? And they all responded things like dirty, icky, gross, disgusting, almost as if it contaminated them. And I'll be honest with you, if I was presented the same possibility, I would have said, yeah, I don't think so. I think I'm going to pass. Even though I know in many ways that is not a rational response. I know rationally that evil is not transmitted from one person into a sweater, into the next person who might handle that sweater. I know that. Rationally, I get that. I think we all get that. The sweater in and of itself would not be contaminated with evil. But most of us would say, hard pass on that one. Not interested. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And so as Beck writes, most of us know evil is not a germ that can contaminate fabric, yet we treat the sweater as if it were, as if it has a moral virus. It's totally illogical, but that's how we treat moral failings. Psychologically, we treat sin as if it were cooties, a moral contaminant that's passed via physical contact. If we emotionally treat sin as if it were cooties, we naturally keep our distance from sinners. And it doesn't have to make rational sense, does it? But it is often where our emotions take us, especially if we don't keep them in check. Well, if you've spent a little time in the New Testament, you know that fear of contamination was enormous in the time of Jesus. And they come by it naturally because in the Old Testament, in Levitical law, there are all sorts of laws set up to make sure, try to help the people of God remain clean and not become unclean, not become contaminated. There were all kinds of laws about how one maintains purity. These purity laws that speak to every different aspect of society. And you may also know from your study in the past that if you become unclean in one area, it makes you unclean in all areas, right? There's not a neat division between, well, that made me physically unclean, but I'm still spiritually unclean. No, the law of uncleanness, of purity, is one thing impacts the whole thing. So if you become unclean in one way, let's say physically, then it also makes you unclean spiritually, and it makes you unclean socially and relationally. And then Jesus shows up on the scene, and he starts breaking all kinds of social and spiritual taboos. Do you remember some of the stories? I started with one of them from Mark chapter 1. Jesus encounters a man with some sort of skin condition, and we usually describe that as leprosy. And it left this man sequestered from the rest of society. He's quarantined. And that again goes back to Levitical law. When someone has something like this skin disease, this ailment, then they have to separate themselves from people, and they have to wear clothing that's a signal to others that they are unclean. And they have to let people know verbally as well. They shout out if someone gets close enough, "Hey, unclean, contaminated guy here, you do not want to get anywhere close to me, because it's not just a concern that I'm going to contaminate you physically, I contaminate you spiritually and socially." Those who found themselves in these places of spiritual and physical impurity found themselves outside of the society. Could not go to the temple, could not go to the synagogue, could not be around other people. And so you have this man with this skin disease, and he is desperate. And so he breaks social and spiritual protocol, and he approaches Jesus. But Jesus does not recoil from the man. He remains right there. Look again at verse 40. A man with leprosy came to Jesus and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Notice his request is not just "make me well." His request is, "You can make me clean. You can make me where I am restored, not just physically, but I'm restored spiritually. I'm restored to the community. I can go back to the temple again, to the synagogue again, to my family again." And Jesus was deeply moved, and he reached out his hand and he touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." I've pointed this out before. Maybe you've noticed it on your own before. Before Jesus heals him, he does what? He touches him. While the man is still unclean, Jesus touches him. A man who probably had not experienced contact in a long time from anyone else, Jesus touches him, and according to the Levitical law, that should make Jesus unclean. But what happens? It is the healing of Jesus that instead changes the man, instead of the man changing Jesus. Jesus had not only the strength to heal the man, but the compassion and the love to touch him while he was still an untouchable. Or turn over to Mark chapter 5. In Mark chapter 5, we get what's often described in the Gospel of Mark as a Markan sandwich, a really creative name, way to describe that Mark will start a story with one group or individual, and then he'll put another story in the middle, and then he'll come back to the story that he started with. And in this instance, we have the story, you may remember, about a fairly well-known figure, a leader named Jairus, who has a 12-year-old daughter who is near the point of death. She is dying, and she is near her last breath. And Jairus sends someone to Jesus begging him, come and help my daughter. And so Jesus heads that way. And while he's on the way, we're introduced to a woman that we don't know a lot about, except that she has some bleeding issue that's not defined. But it has had her spend almost all of her money for about a dozen years going to doctors, seeking treatment, but she has not gotten better. And if you know your Levitical law, you know that a woman with a bleeding issue means that she is unclean. She's not supposed to be going out in public because she would contaminate other people. And yet she's desperate. And so she fights her way through the crowd and she touches Jesus. And according to law, that should make Jesus unclean. But do you remember the story? Without even interacting, that touch was all it took. And the woman was instantly healed. And there's interaction that follows. But this woman with this ailment that would have left her unclean for a decade finds instant healing and cleansing and mending and the ability to not just feel better, but to get back into society again. Well, Jesus continues on his way and he arrives at the home of Jairus and he's brought beside the daughter who is 12, who by this point is not just dying, but she has died. She's dead. By the way, according to Levitical law, dead people, a big contaminant. You don't want to spend a lot of time around dead people. You definitely don't want to touch dead people. Mark 5:41, Jesus took her by the hand and said, Talitha koum, which means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Jesus is going to heal her. He's going to raise her from the dead. But before he does, what does he do? He touches her. He takes her hand. Jesus didn't need to touch her to heal her, but he touches her. He's not afraid of contamination because he knows God's resurrection power is more than enough for cleansing power. And it's this habit, and we could give other examples, but it is this habit of Jesus, of boundary breaking, of pushing through the taboos, that leaves him at odds with the Pharisees, especially as it relates to table fellowship, with the people he eats with and spends his time with. Because the Pharisees are concerned about contamination. They're concerned about cleansing, ritual purity. But Jesus has this habit of hanging out with people that they think are contaminants. So look at chapter 2, verse 15 in Mark. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, who is a tax collector, many other tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners? In other words, doesn't he know that by eating with morally contaminated people, he is contaminating himself? Verse 17, on hearing this, Jesus said to them, it is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. Pharisees are working from a mindset that even though it's described differently, is just another one of those ways where we're talking about moral cooties, this idea of moral contamination. It's the kind of thing that sometimes would make us feel emotionally uncomfortable around particular people, certain kinds of sinners with certain kinds of sin. It's that fear that it somehow rubs off on us, that our reputation is soiled, that our actions will be questioned. Or as Richard Beck again in his book talks about the contamination psychology, he describes this as negativity dominance. Negativity dominance. And here's how he illustrates it. Imagine that someone gives you an apple, lovely apple, beautiful apple, but they add something else into the equation. They add a dead cockroach. Sorry for this image. And imagine you take that dead cockroach and you take the apple and you touch just one little part of the apple. Now imagine I do that and then I hand you the apple and I say, would you like to eat this apple? And most of you would say, absolutely not, right? That is negativity dominance. It is the idea that the negative dominates this other substance. Even if I gave you the apple and I said, now I will cut off not only the part that touched, but let's add an inch all the way around that thing. We touch one little part and we'll cut all of that off and then I'll give you the rest of the apple that was never touched. And what would you say? It's probably the same thing I would say. Hard pass. Not interested. I don't want to have anything to do with it. The idea is that even a little impurity pollutes the whole, right? Even a little bit of contaminant contaminates the whole. And in some ways, we also think of that not only as negativity dominance, but negativity permanence. That once it's impacted, the whole thing is a goner. Even if we cut off the rest, or even if we could clean it and doctors could say, you know, this thing is spick and span. There's not a single, we'd say, I don't care. Get that thing away from me, put it in the trash. I am not interested. Now, in the world of food, that makes sense. But notice what happens when we start treating people as if they were the polluted substances. Because you could go through these stories in the gospel, and according to the mindset of the day, the woman with the issue of bleeding, the girl who was dying and then died, the one who had leprosy, and the people who were morally contaminated, the tax collectors, the sinners, the prostitutes, there was this idea that even a little contact contaminated the whole thing. Jesus is the apple, and the sinners and the struggling, they are the roach in this story. And you make a little contact, and the whole thing is contaminated. But what does Jesus show us? What does Jesus model to us? What is more powerful? And to Jesus, what is more powerful is His purity. What is more powerful is His touch. What is more powerful is His mission. What is more powerful to Jesus is compassion and love and mercy. What is more powerful in the end? It is not the negative. It is the positive in the story of Jesus. So here's what we have to wrestle with, and here's what I want to close with this morning. If we are to be a people who regularly practice the kind of hospitality that we've been talking about in this series, who welcome others in who are different, from different places, from different backgrounds, with different struggles, with different sins. We're going to have to be honest and wrestle with our own hang-ups about contamination, about fear of contact, wrestle with our own fears that we don't always like to verbalize about negativity dominance, that a little time turns us, that a little contact turns us, that a little love turns us. Hospitality demands a new understanding of what's going on in our heart. It demands discipline and intentionality. It demands we get outside of those ways that we try to protect ourselves, sometimes without even knowing. But here's the second message I would tell you. Whether we're willing to deal with our own internal hesitation or not, Jesus is always blowing past the protocols to provide compassion and love and healing. If we want to be Jesus, we have to get outside the walls that we build up to protect ourselves. And here's the other message I want you to hear. I don't know where you're coming from this morning, or what struggle that you may have, or whether or not you feel like you are worthy of the love of God or the grace of God. But the message Jesus continues to deliver over and over is this: God is always powerful enough. God is always powerful enough. God's mending is more powerful than whatever brokenness that you have. God's healing is more powerful than whatever ailment you struggle with. God's inclusion is more powerful than all the things that alienate us. God's freedom is more powerful than all of our addictions. God's life is more powerful than any death. God's mercy is always more powerful than our sin. And you need to know that. And you need to remember that. Whatever you're struggling with right now, Jesus is reaching out to touch you, even in those places where you feel untouchable. He's reaching out to welcome you in all those places where you felt unwelcome. He's reaching out to heal you in all those places that you're hurting. So I want to open the door to you. If there's something that you need to talk or pray about, I'm always here. If you've never given your life to God and experienced the transformation that comes from life in Him, if you've never been baptized, let's talk about that. Let's look at that, because God is more than enough.